Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I have a guest up in here. We'll be doing an interview with a guy named Stormy. So there's also only one mic, so hopefully it will turn out fine. We'll both have to be sharing a mic. So Stormy, you should definitely listen. He cut a bunch of records and produced a bunch of records and sang in a group called The Lost Family, who cut an excellent song called Pretty Face. So you should definitely keep tuned for this interview. So first of all, Stormy, you want to say hi to the audience?
Hi there. How's it going?
Okay. Well, thanks so much for coming down, first of all. So first of all, what's your real name? I'll call you Stormy the whole interview, but is it okay if I ask you your real name?
Jack Coley.
Okay. So first of all, your first record that you ever cut, you cut actually under the name Stormy, right?
Right.
And it was recorded for a label called Twinight Records in Chicago.
Right.
And so, first of all, let's get some history. So what part are you from Chicago are you from?
South Side of Chicago.
Okay. And you actually cut the record when you were in high school, right?
Yes.
So what high school did you go to?
Hyde Park.
Okay, and your record came out around 67, is that right?
Right.
Okay, and you were classmates with, I guess we were talking earlier, the CODs were your classmates, right?
Yeah, well, we had, I knew them, we were friends and stuff,
Okay, mm-hmm. And they cut Michael before your record came out.
Yeah.
So you cut your record, so first of all, you cut your record when you were 17 years old. And it was actually, you told me you produced it yourself and you did everything yourself.
Right.
And the record, it's got two pretty good sides. The intended A side is called Devastator.
Mm-hmm.
And the B side was called I Won't Stop to Cry.
Right.
So what's the story, first of all? How did you end up recording a record, producing a record? And
Marshall of the Satellites. He was singing in groups and stuff, and we were real good friends and stuff. And I said, well, I'd really like to be a writer.
Okay.
And I always had it. I wanted to be a writer, but then when we wrote the tune and I was gonna put it out, I said, who's gonna sing it? Marshall said, you are. That's who.
So how did you know Marshall, first of all?
He used to work in a corner grocery store, and I used to come in. I was a little bitty guy, and I used to get like two pieces of bubble gum, and he'd slip me three.
Okay. So where was the store located?
I was up on 70th and between Harper and Dorchester.
Okay.
Right in there.
So that was even when you were in grade school. You knew him.
Mm-hmm.
You would go to the store, buy candy, and he'd give you extra candy.
Right.
So then You just became friends with him. Is that how you got interested in music? Was it through Marshall?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the story? Like, you just decided to become a writer one day?
Right. I thought that was something that I would like, And Curtis Mayfield told me, he said, "Be all you can be. If you can sing, then sing too. Because you never know, you might wind up being a promotion man or something. You never know where you might fit in. But just go ahead and try everything."
How did you know Curtis?
I worked for Curtis as a writer on Curtime Records.
Oh, but that was later. That was after your first record. So the first record you cut. So how did you end up? I guess you knew you wanted to be involved with music somehow.
Right.
Had you ever written any material before, or was that the first song you ever wrote?
The first song. The first two songs I ever wrote were those two.
Did you have any musical training, or did you play an instrument?
No.
Okay, so you just wrote those songs,
yeah,
and then you ended up getting it actually put out on a record company, Twinight Records, and you were one of the earliest records on the label. Mm-hmm. So what's the story with that?
Well, that was what's his name? E. Rodney Jones took me to Twinight Records, and he said, "Hey, listen to this. We recorded the record then." And he said, "I think you might like it." They listened to it, and they said, "Yeah, we can use that. We want him, as an artist." So I just came in, just signing contracts, over and over. I didn't know what was going on, but I just signed contracts, and I'm still waiting on them to pay me, Pete Wright.
So you actually cut the record and just chopped it around, and Twinight picked it up. So it's interesting, though, because I talked to a lot of groups that recorded when they were in high school, but none of them actually produced their own record. Mm-hmm. So what's the story? You actually got the money together to produce and mm-hmm. do the recording.
Yeah.
So you just saved up money and you're like, I'm going to produce a record.
Right. I wanted to put a record out and I wanted to write it. And that was about it. I had no idea of singing it, you know, but...
So you just decided, you're like, I'm going to put a record out. Did you think you were going to start your own label, or what did you...
No, I never dreamed of that.
So you just were hoping to get it on another label, a song that you produced and
yeah.
wrote. And then, so did you just produce and write it, and you were talking to Marshall, and Marshall was like, you should sing it too?
Yeah, yeah.
So
I said, I wonder who we're going to get to sing this. He said, you, that's who we are.
Okay. So Marshall, was he like your mentor, sort of?
Yeah, he was that.
Okay. So then how did it end up actually getting recorded? Where did you record it at?
RCA Records. They used to have a studio down Navy Pier.
Okay.
Right on the pier. It was a four-track studio, and... it was down there. It was RCA. That's where we recorded it.
Okay, and so you recorded the record, and you not only had to do that, you had to get the music together and
all
hire
the band members, everything. You had to get a.
So how did you actually wrote the song, but you didn't
arrangements?
You didn't do the arrangements and stuff, right?
No, Eddie Silvers. I hired him.
Okay.
To do it.
And the actual writing the music down, and you just how did you work that out with Eddie? Did you just kind of sing it to him or tell him how you want it to sound?
Yeah. Well, see, basically, when a song comes to me, it comes with the music and the words.
But did you know, could you read music and write music?
No, but I had it in my head. And if anybody could follow me or know where I'm coming from, they could, down there, anybody could sit there and play the stuff. I show them how it goes, you know.
Okay, so you worked with Eddie Silvers and showed them how
mm-hmm.
it went.
Yeah.
And then do you remember the band that played on or the orchestra or whoever played the music?
Marshall played drums. We had, Walter Scott was on lead guitar. And, who was on bass guitar? I can't think. It wasn't Satterfield. I really can't think of who it was.
Okay, so you pretty much hired an arranger and a band,
mm-hmm.
and you had to hire backup singers too, right?
Yeah.
Because you're singing with, there's backup, so who's singing backup on the record?
The Shy Lights.
Okay, and is all the Shy Lights pretty much singing on the record?
All except for Eugene Ruckert, he came late.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, both sides are good. First, I'll play the I Won't Stop to Cry, which is more like a mid-tempo song. The other side's like a funk record, which we'll play after. So this is I Won't Stop to Cry, and if you just tuned in, we're talking to Stormy, who's a singer and a producer. So this is his first record.
Won't stop to cry. don't want to let her go. But brother, I got to let her know that I.
Okay, that was just Stormy with his very first record, I Won't Stop to Cry. If you're just tuning in, Stormy is up in here talking about his music. So that record, you fully produced it yourself.
Yeah.
And paid for everything yourself, and then you got it picked up by a record label, Twinite Records.
Well, you know, I take all the credit, but Marshall was such a big help to me. He did half of the work.
Like he taught you how to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Yeah, but it's cool that you were able to become friends with him. And
mm-hmm.
what inspired you, first of all, to start doing the music? Was it just knowing Marshall, or like, why did you want to get into music?
Probably just knowing Marshall.
Okay, so the record got picked up by Twinite Records, and you said you signed a bunch of stuff that you didn't know
mm-hmm.
what it said, and then so they didn't really promote the record, right?
No, not very much.
But the intended A-side was a funk record called Devastator.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember if it ever got? Did you ever hear it on the radio at all?
Yeah, they did play it on the radio, but not that often. It wasn't played. They really didn't push it like they pushed a lot of the records, you know.
Okay. Well, I think you needed a lot of money to mm-hmm. to push records back. So the record came out. Was it 1967?
Yeah.
And I never asked. I don't think. How old were you when the record came out?
67, oh boy, 17 years old.
Okay, so you were 17 years old when the record came out, and you were still in high school, so that's pretty impressive, just getting all that stuff together. So, the intended A side, which I'm going to play in a second, the Devastator side, were you going for like a James Brown type sound? It's kind of like a boast type record where you're talking about how you're so great with the ladies and stuff.
Yeah.
Like what was that?
My other buddies, the CODs, had put out Michael the Lover.
Okay.
And Michael the Lover sold real big. It was a real big sell. So I said, well, now if Michael the Lover can sell so big, what about the Devastator? I'll give them that and see if they like it.
So the idea was another like ladies' man type song.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's a different type of song too, because it's funk. It's like a funky like James mm-hmm. Brown type song.
Mm-hmm.
Was that your idea when you?
Right,
when you wrote it, pretty much. Well, I'll play the record, and we could talk some more. If anyone has any questions, they can call up. The number is 773-702-8424. This is Stormy with The Devastator.
Oh,
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. If you're just tuning in, we are in the middle of an interview with Stormy. That was the A side of his first record. It was called Devastator. Nice funky cut. With the Shy Lights doing the backing, and actually, as we said before, that heavy drumming was actually Marshall Thompson playing the drums too, which is impressive. So that record ended up, you paid all that money for producing it, and then the record label picked it up, but they didn't promote it, so it didn't really sell. So I guess after that, what did you do? I know you produced a bunch of records, and you had a group later. So what happened after that record?
I worked for Curtis Mayfield as a writer. And when I first got there, he came up with a song. It was called Sexy Russell. This guy, Sexy Russell, had put out a psychedelic soul. And they didn't have any words to it. It didn't have any story. It didn't have any meaning. It was just out there. So he said, bring it together, you know, give it some, put a story around it.
Okay.
And so then I recorded Sexy Russell's Psychedelic Soul with them.
So right after the Twilight record, you became a writer at well that
Kurt
that Tom. Yeah, Psychedelic Soul was on Eddie Thomas's Thomas label actually. So was that the first thing you did right after first music thing you did? So was that right after? Were you out of high school by the time you started working for?
Just barely.
Okay. Well, it must have been cool to work for Curtis.
Oh, it was great.
How did you get hooked up with Eddie Thomas and Curtis?
I just went out there one day, and I took some of my stuff, and he said, yeah, we can use you, you know. Gave me some bunch of papers. First, he asked me to get a release from Twilight Records.
Okay.
So I went there, and I got a release, and I took it to him, and then he said, yeah, you're okay now. Now you can just sign here. You can work with us as a writer. All I ever wanted to be was a writer, so I was happy. And I met Donny Hathaway, and we became friends, and... Let's see, there was Brad Bobo was out there. He was a writer, too.
Okay. So you didn't know Curtis before. You just knocked on the door, pretty much, at Curtom.
You just
got
in.
A job. That's excellent that back then you could do that. And I guess there were so many record companies in Chicago. So Psychedelic Soul, the music was already written, and you wrote the words for it, right? And so did you know Sexy Russell?
I just met him once.
Okay, because I know...
I worked with him on the tune right there in the studio.
I know he had a couple of records before this one, and I think this was his last record, but I don't know what happened to him. Or do you even know, was that his real name?
His name was... what was his name? I used to know his name, too. I can call you back and give it to you. I got it on the contract, yeah.
Okay, so...
Vernon Taplin. That's his name.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And but you don't know what happened to him or if he ever recorded anything else?
He moved out in, not Maywood, in Bellwood.
Okay, so he's still in the Chicago area, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is another kind of, like, funky record.
Mm-hmm. If anybody knows how to get in touch with Sexy Russell, Vernon Thomas, he's got money at Warner Brothers Records.
Okay.
All they have to do is just come up there and give him his name, his social security number, they'll send him a check.
Okay, well, if anyone knows Sexy Russell, and you said his name's Vernon Thompson or Vernon
Taplin,
you should give a call up here. Again, the number is 773-702-8424. And we'll play the record so people know the song we're talking about. This is Sexy Russell with Psychedelic Soul. There's some issues with the CD player. Give me a second.
Oh.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Right now, if you're just tuning in, I am talking to Stormy, who was a recording artist and a writer and a producer. That was just a record he produced by a singer named Saxy Russell, and that was called Psychedelic Soul. And you wrote the lyrics for that record for the Thomas label, Eddie Thomas's record label. And that came out probably, what, like 68, 69, something like that. And so did you write anything else at, when you were with Kurt Tom or Thomas?
No, I didn't stay there very long.
Okay.
After that, I started my own thing. I started producing the CODs.
Okay.
You know, and
did you produce any of the records they released?
Pretty Face, I did them all.
Well, Pretty Face, that stuff came out in the '74.
Right.
But you did a bunch of records before that, right? You did that L. Anthony record.
Oh,
and you,
yeah, that came out next, yeah.
And then you also you wrote a song for Gregory Washington. Who was Wash, who was a famous guitar player, played and everything. So, first of all, the L. Anthony record that you did, were you already finished with Kurt Tom at that time?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that was the... Yeah, that era was... was it... that was the emotions and stuff was in there. They were we were on the same label with a guy with glasses, short guy.
But the emotions, the emotions were on Brainstorm, which is what the Gregory Washington record is on. So they were never on Kurt Tom though at that time.
I'm trying to think of that old guy's name because he ran it. Archie Lee Hill. Yeah, it was a Leo Austell. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he used to run all that stuff.
So
Archie Lee Hill, did all of be on there, too. Was Archie Russell.
He said he ran the Brainstorm label. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
But, so with Kurt Tom, though, did you ever write any more songs for
them? No, I left there.
Okay, so you just wrote that one song, and it's the only thing you did. And that record didn't really get promoted or played, right?
No, not in Chicago at all.
But why did you leave Kurt Tom?
Well, they were so slow, you know, they weren't doing nothing for me. They said, well, they got, you know, these other artists and they got big hits, and so, you know, you just have to wait, you know. I said, great, you know, let me go somewhere else where they need me.
Okay, so then you said you worked as a writer for Brainstorm Records, is that?
Right.
And Brainstorm Records, you were just talking about, like, Leo Austell and a bunch of people were involved with it. And you wrote this one record, which I'll play a little bit later, called Pamela L'Amour, for Gregory Washington, who was the guitarist who played on from the West Side, who played on a lot of records. And so In fact, that was funny. I was talking to someone else the other day who said he played the music on this, mm-hmm. a guy named Wilton Crump. I don't know if you remember him. But so you wrote that one record for Brainstorm. Did you write anything else for Brainstorm?
Oh, let me think. I did two sides that were never put out. I remember that. And then the L. Anthony stuff while I was there.
Okay. And but L. Anthony came out on the Starview record label, which was Clarence Johnson, right?
Yeah, but it was me and Hillary anyway, Hillary Johnson.
Okay. And so the L. Anthony record, how did you get involved with that? You produced that record.
The record was finished when I handed it to Hillary. Hillary said, yeah, great, but let me put some girls on the background. We didn't have girls on the background. And he had this singer that was real hot. He was doing shows at Drury Lane and stuff. He was getting real big. He said, let me put him on the tracks, because if we put him on it, we might have an instant hit. I said, I don't care. I'm all about the money. Go ahead. Great.
Okay. So L. Anthony, he was from Gary, right?
Yeah.
And he was originally a member of the Passions, mm-hmm. who were the New Day from Gary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm actually interviewing one of them next week, which is funny. but L. Anthony was, and then he left the group to be solo, and Hillary had already put out a record on L. Anthony already, and he wanted you to produce another record on him. Is that right?
Well, the Will You Wait came out. The record was finished when L. Anthony came along to it.
Okay, and he just put his vocals on it.
That's all.
Will You Wait was actually, it was a cover.
Background Girls, and that was it.
So, but you wrote the song Sweet Joanne.
Yeah.
And you produced both Sweet Joanne and That's What My Lady Say.
Yeah.
So Sweet Joanne, which is, both songs are really good songs. I'm going to play Sweet Joanne. The Background Girls are actually the Love Lights, right?
I'm not sure. I never knew who he used for them.
Okay. I think it sounds like them, and I heard that like Rhonda and I forget the other one's name, I'm sorry. But it's the two that, besides Patty, did a lot of background
mm-hmm.
vocals, and it sounds like them on the record at least. So I'll play L. Anthony record. So you wrote this record and produced this record, and this came out on Clarence Johnson's Starview label, which pretty much produced the whole thing, and he just put it out on his label. Mm-hmm. And when did this come out, like 71?
I don't know. 74, I was doing Pretty Face. I remember that.
Okay, well, I'll play this record. This is L. Anthony with Sweet Joanne. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are tuned to the Sitting in the Park show. If you're just tuning in, we're in the middle of an interview with Stormy. That was just a record that he wrote and produced by a singer named L. Anthony that was called Sweet Joanne. And that came out on Clarence Johnson's Starview record label. Yeah. So do you remember if that record got any play in Chicago?
Very little, maybe twice.
Okay. Yeah. And then you did a follow-up record on him called That's What My Lady Say.
Yeah.
And that record is even more obscure than the first one. It's been hard to find. So around that time, you had also done this Gregory Washington record, which mm-hmm. I'll play later in the interview. And then did you ever write and produce anything else before you got your own group, The Lost Family?
Oh, let me see. No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, one thing I haven't asked you yet is how'd you get the name Stormy?
Oh, well, I was sent by Bob Morris. He was my manager, and he sent me to Lorel Simon. And Lorel Simon is one of the greatest. He's done The Sly, The Slick, and The Wicked, and so many tunes. I mean, you can't name them all. But Lorel said, we need to come up with some material on you, and you need a name, too. And I says, what can you think of? You know, and they all got together, and it was either Fred, his brother, or Lorel, one of the two, says Stormy. I said, yeah, that sounds great. And it's been that way ever since.
So that was actually while you were in high school, before you ever had a record out, you already had a manager.
Yeah.
But you were originally trying to be like a writer, not a recording artist.
A writer, that was what I wanted.
So was it a manager for your writing, pretty much? Like, how'd you get a manager?
Just getting into the music business, and then like I kind of got pushed into singing.
Okay, so Marshall was like, you got to sing, and then your manager was like, now you need a name? Is that sort of what happened?
Yeah, he wanted to send me there to get some material.
Okay.
You know, but we never came up with any material that I liked, and that's why I started writing my own.
So originally you were going to... So I'm confused because you said that you wrote Devastator and I Won't Stop to Cry, and you intended... You wrote it for someone else, and then you ended up recording it on yourself.
I never found anybody. I never even tried.
But then now you're saying that you originally were going to actually be a recording artist and went to other people to get to write for you?
Well, that was a different time. See, that was when I had the CODs.
Okay.
They told me to come out there to audition for their manager.
Okay.
Which was, he used to shine shoes.
Okay.
His name was Bob Morris.
Okay.
And I went out there and Bob liked me.
Okay.
And he hooked me up with Lorel Simon.
Okay.
That's the way things happened. They were happening fast in those days.
So all of that was before your first record, pretty much.
Yeah.
And
it was.
Did he try to get you onto the CODs label at the time, or
CODs never had a label?
Well, they were on CalMac Records.
Okay.
But I mean, but you were never affiliated with that label,
no.
Didn't? Okay. So then, ultimately, there were a few years in between going back to the 70s. The last thing you produced was the L. Anthony records before the Lost Family.
Yeah.
So the L. Anthony record came out in like 71, something like that.
Yeah.
And the Lost Family record came out in like 74.
Yeah.
So what were you doing? Were you still in the music business in those 3 years?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a big thing to take a year off or whatever. You know, you don't just keep recording, you know. Like a guy was telling me, he said, why didn't I cut another album, because I cut an album, you know, and it's time to cut another album. Well, the album costs between $30,000 and $50,000.
Okay.
But they don't know that, and they think you just can cut another album like that. It just doesn't happen like that.
Yeah, it just costs a lot of money to do stuff. So then you ended up forming the group The Lost Family.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the story with the group? Who were the members of the group besides you?
Well, you had Carl Washington, and you had... Robert Lewis.
And they were both CODs, right?
Yeah.
So the Lost Family was pretty much the CODs, except you were replacing Larry Brownlee.
Yeah.
And Larry Brownlee was singing in the Lost Generation at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get the idea to form a singing group?
I really don't know.
Okay. It just sort of happened. Because previously you had cut as a solo artist and you had produced. This is the first time you were actually in a singing group.
Mm.
So how'd you come up with the name The Lost Family?
Well, let's see, The Lost Family.
Did it have anything to do with The Lost Generation, or was it just totally...
It may have. That was probably it, yeah.
Okay. So then you cut a record called Pretty Face.
Yeah.
Did you produce the record yourself?
Yeah.
And it got picked up by a Chicago label. Was it like International Music Bag, something like that?
Yeah.
And it actually got played in Chicago, right, this record?
Yeah.
So it must have been, it was like your first hit that you had done?
I don't know. I really never thought about it, you know. I really don't consider that as being a hit. It was a local hit,
at least. Yeah. So I'll play the record and we could talk some more. This is The Lost Family from 1974. This is called Pretty Face. Okay, that was just The Lost Family with their record Pretty Face. If you're just tuning in, Stormy, who was a member of the Lost Family, is up in here talking about his music. So that record, it got some play in Chicago. It was like a local hit in Chicago, at least. People request that record sometimes on my show. And it came out on two different labels, actually, right? So what's the story with that? Like, it originally was on International Music Bag, and it got picked up by Innovation 2, which I guess was Warner Brothers' label, which the Lost Generation were on that label, too. So you just switched it over to another label, pretty much?
We wanted more airplay, and we wanted more push on the national scene instead of a local scene.
Okay.
And we could get that with Warner Brothers, you know, we thought, you know.
Okay.
But they didn't do that much, you know.
Okay. And then the record, first of all, I never really asked, so you actually, it's you and two of the CODs.
Yeah.
And you just knew them from high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Had you ever sang with them before?
No.
No, so you were just like, guys, let's get together and...
Yeah, we never practiced.
Okay. So you just wrote the record, went to the studio, and pretty much cut that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good, at least, that you were able to get together so quickly. But, so you never really did any shows or anything, because you weren't...
We did a few up in Aurora and stuff like that, you know.
Okay.
So
to do shows, actually, you had to kind of get together and practice and...
Never practiced.
Okay. Did you do any other songs besides Pretty Face on your show?
Strolling in the park, watching winter turn to spring. One of the songs like that one, you know.
Okay.
I knew them, you know.
So then you actually released a whole album yourself of the Lost Family. So what's the story with the album? You released it under the name Saborian and the Los.
Yeah, well, my son's name was Saborian.
Okay.
And but I don't even think he had came along then. That was back in 74.
Okay.
You know, he was just a plan later.
So why did you change your name from the Lost Family?
The Lost Family, because the group had busted up, you know.
Okay.
And that's one reason I started not picking up too many people to put them out, you know, record them.
Okay.
Was because by the time the record got out or on the thing, they'd be busted up or gone, you know.
Okay.
So
the Los you were saying before is kind of like a reference to the Lost Family.
Yeah.
So the record, one thing that's interesting is you put it out and it's completely self kind of pressed, and like other things you had done productions and they got picked up by other labels.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first record you did where you pressed it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it even says there's some stuff on the back of the record talking about how, you know, you're going to sell it through word of mouth and, you
mm-hmm.
know, you tell your friends about this record.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually intended to kind of promote it all yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you pressed this record and you didn't really get distribution. It must have been hard to get distribution at the time.
Yeah.
But in addition to Pretty Face, there's some good songs. So I'll play another song from the record. So this is the Lost Family, but under the name Saborian and the Los. And this track is called Something's Happening to Susie.
Now she's gone.
He took her away.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. If you're just tuning in, a guy named Stormy is up in here talking about the music that he wrote, produced, and sang on. That was just Saborian and the Lowest, and that track was called Something Happened to Susie. And as we know, this is the exact same group as the Lost Family who did the song Pretty Face. So pretty much the only thing that the group did was the self-released album that you put out by Saborian and the Los. And there were little opportunities to get play in Chicago at that time just because the record industry was leaving and WVON was breaking up and all those stations were going away. So it was hard to get independent records played and promoted by the mid-70s. So you pretty much did, the group didn't do anything after that, is that right?
I
know you're doing some stuff now, which we'll talk about in a second. I was just asking, did you know if the Lost Family didn't do anything after that, right?
No, I've never heard of them doing anything.
I think the two CODs cut one more record after that, called Give Me Your Love, something like that. But you never did any music until recently, is that right?
In 2001.
Mm-hmm. Is that the CD that you have here? Mm-hmm. So a couple of things that you've been doing recently. You cut a CD in 2001, and the CD is just under the name Stormy Blue, or is that the title of the CD?
Yeah, it's the same title as the name of it. Just the name of the CD is the name of myself, Stormy Blue.
Okay. Would you have just added the blue?
Yeah.
Okay.
I felt a little bluesy, you know.
And then the other thing of interest is your material has appeared on a bunch of CDs, too, like the Stormy record at least has. Maybe the Psychedelic Soul has, too, I'm not sure. But the Stormy record was on a CD, a UK CD on the Ace Kent label that came out in 95, but there's a new CD just coming out that the Devastator is on, and that's the first time it's ever going to be on CD. So the CD, it's called, let me see, it's called Eccentric Soul, Twinight's Lunar Rotation, so you should look for that if you want Stormy's material. And right now I'm going to play something off of the CD you did from 2001, and this is track 4. This is called Star Child. So when did you... First of all, where can people find this CD? Is it available?
Yes, you can get it on Amazon.com, or you can get it on Borders.com, or CDNow.com, or you can get it at Dr. Wax.
Okay, so I'll play the record now, and we'll talk a little bit more. This is Stormy, as Stormy Blue, from his 2001 CD. This track is called Star Child. And if anyone has any questions, they can call up 773-702-8424.
Lots of candy.
Okay, that was just Stormy with a couple of tracks off of his 2001 CD. The first track was called Star Child, and the second track was called I Give My Love to You. And I see that some sort of famous or people, Chicago musicians who have been in other groups have been on the CD. Like, I see Steve Robinson's name. I guess he was from Windy City, right? Mm-hmm. And Danny Leek, I guess his band was the 100% Pure Poison band. So probably a lot of other people, whose names I don't recognize, were also in other mm-hmm. other groups. So where can people get the CD again?
You can get it at Dr. Wax. You can get it at Amazon.com. You can get it at Borders or Borders.com. Or you could get it at CD Now.
Okay, and you're actually working on new material, too?
Yeah, I just finished the new 10 tunes.
Okay, and so that's going to be coming out on the same label, and they should look in the same places, pretty much.
Well, no, I just about worked out a deal with Warner Brothers again.
Okay.
So we'll see just how that goes, and then I'll tell you what label it'll be on. You know, it's going to take...
Well, I hope that works out, yeah. Yeah. It'd be cool to be on Warner Brothers again after 30 years. So, thanks so much for coming on down. And again, in addition to that CD, they can get get the Devastator track on a new CD. I think it's Twinite. It's Eccentric Soul. You should search the web for it. But any last words for the audience? Thanks so much for coming down, first of all.
No, it was really a pleasure.
Okay.
And I hope you like my CD, and I hope you buy it.
Okay. Well, if anyone has any questions, you can call. The number here is 773-702-8424. And this last record I'm going to play is the record you wrote for Wash, Gregory Washington. This is Pamela L'Amour.